Reggie Kimmel. Cause I've been running so long. Yeah, they name me Reggie Kimmel. Cause I've been running so long. Yeah, you know they got me accused of murder when I ain't did no one wrong.
All those fugitive blues here to start us off tonight. We're always on the cutting edge, talking fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken. Ken just barely, but he's here with us now, just finishing up his lunch. And tonight we're going to be on part two, which will be Acts 3 and 4 of The End is But the Beginning. So picking up where we left off on the June 12th broadcast, let's start off with the usual host, Bobby Neer. Bob, go ahead.
Thank you, Dave. When we ended our show 2 weeks ago, we had spent a considerable amount of time discussing a pivotal character in this episode, a woman named Amy Rennick. We had discussed how different she was from all the other females that have seen in the series up until now, how she was a potential love interest for Richard Kimmel, how she approached it differently than other people, in kind of a shy, backwards kind of way, rather than throwing herself at his feet as so many other people have done. And we found her very likable, and in fact, everybody seems to like her, and we even considered the fact that maybe he would do well to spend the rest of his life with her if he ever gains his freedom. That was in the first half of the episode. In the second half of The End is But the Beginning, which is what we're here to discuss tonight, we find out something else about Amy Rennick, and that is that she's very smart, that she's very quick on her feet, and she's very unafraid, especially of Gerard. And this makes her even better in our eyes, I do believe. And when the Act 3 begins, we are in a situation where Kimball realizes he has to go back to the scene of the accident that started this whole thing off, because the man who really died in the car crash was a former soldier who was wearing dog tags. And he realizes if they did not burn in the crash, which is probably unlikely, Gerard may find them, and if he does, he'll know that Kimball was not alone in the truck, and therefore he probably did not die in the crash. So he decides he's got to go back no matter what. And Amy immediately says that she's going to go help him, because she's very helpful throughout this episode, actually. And she decides she's going to go with him. They're deciding what to do, and all of a sudden there's a knock at the door. And very unfortunately, that can only mean one thing, and that's that Gerard is at the door, and indeed he is. Now, this is a little carryover from the first half, because at the end of the first half, Gerard had actually met Amy in the police station, and they discussed Richard Kimmel, and she blurted out very unwisely, and just about the only mistake she makes in this episode, something about the one-armed man. And after she leaves the room, Gerard is thinking to himself, wait a minute, what do you mean one-armed man? How does she know about the one-armed man unless she really knows about the case? And he intends to hang her with that, and that's exactly why he's at the door, to indicate that she could only know about the one-armed man one way, and that's if she heard it from Richard Kimmel. So Gerard is at the door, and Kimmel goes and runs away and hides in the kitchen. He intends to make a getaway from there through the back door. Unfortunately, Amy has not oiled the hinges on the back door in like a couple of decades, and it's making an incredible amount of noise. So he can't really get out without calling attention. And Amy's pet cat is in the room, too, and is crawling around on the table, which is set with dishes, and knocking things over, also making a lot of noise. Now, this is a very effective scene, and if there's one thing The Fugitive does well, it's these scenes where Gerard and Kimmel are close to each other, separated by a wall or a door or a curtain or something, and you sit on the edge of your seat wondering whether everything is going to be over if he finds out. They do it a lot in the series, but to tell you the truth, it's the kind of thing you can do over and over again, and it's always fascinating. And it's done particularly well here. It's very suspenseful to see Kimball back there trapped between a noisy door and a cat in the middle, and Amy and Gerard in the other room. In this particular scene, Gerard starts beating on her about why does she know who about the one-armed man. And he mentions that he looked in the local papers and sees that when the Kimmel case was in the news, there was hardly any mention of it in this particular town, and there was nothing in it about the one-armed man. Amy is extremely quick, to put it mildly, and she says, well, I wasn't born here. I was born and I lived in St. Louis, and even though I moved away, I still get the paper. And she, and of course it was covered in a big city like St. Louis, and she virtually sticks it in his face, and Gerard practically pees on the floor because he just can't believe that anybody would actually come up with that right in his face. This says a lot about Amy. She's really, really fast, and she's really, really unafraid. Ken, isn't this just another reason to like her, is it not?
Oh, I love her in this episode. She is, she's not only a caring person, you know, for Kimball, but she's witty, and she's crafty, and that was a very good scene there with Gerard. I'll have to give props to Lieutenant Gerard in this story, you know, along with Never Wave Goodbye and also Nightmare at North Oak. Gerard is very good in this episode. You know, he's at the police station. You know, he doesn't, he needs to be convinced himself that Kimball's dead, and he's snooping around. And when he talked to Amy at the police station, kind of grilled her a little bit. And when she mentioned the one-armed man, he didn't respond right away. He just talked to the other detective.
That's right.
And then when Amy left, he tells the other detective, how does she know
right.
about the one-armed man? That was a very good line.
Well, he didn't want to give it away right away.
Yeah. So then he shows up at the house. But you forgot one scene there, Bob, in Act 3. And it's one of my favorite scenes, is Kimball and Amy in the kitchen. You remember? Kimball wakes up after sleeping for 10 or 11 hours.
Yeah.
And he's cooking, I don't know, breakfast or lunch, one
right.
of the two. And Amy comes in, and she looks at him, and she says, hey, how you doing today?
Right.
And then she, you know, they kind of talk a little bit. And then they got a little close. I don't know if you noticed that. And I was very, very disappointed that there wasn't just one little extra scene there where Kimball and Amy get close and maybe a little kiss. You know, I'll have to ask Kitty about this because, you know, Kimball is pretty crafty with women. You know, he, remember in Storm Center, you know, Marcy King got to kiss him.
Oh, that was disgusting.
Yeah, and then some of these other girls... You know,
well, it is kind of odd. He seems to only kiss the dysfunctional one.
Yeah, I just wanted one small little kiss right there in the kitchen. What do you think, Kitty?
But, well, that would have been nice. But, you know, keep in mind, I mean, these two hadn't even been able to go out on a first date. So, you know, it was this would-be romance that never got a chance to flourish at anything. Didn't even get a chance to get started because, you know, they hadn't gone out on the date yet, and Kimball ends up in this accident and Gerard's on the scene. I mean, that pretty much puts water on any fire that's smoldering. So I did like this scene. I thought it was very dramatic with the cat. I mean, because at one point Gerard and Amy actually do hear some dishes fall on the floor, and you can see Gerard getting suspicious and wanting to go into the room. But then the cat all of a sudden comes out of the kitchen.
Did you see that was a trained cat? Did you see how that cat comes out? And apparently his trainer is also out of camera range. And the cat comes through the door and immediately stops and hunkers down on the floor. Now, it's not easy to train a cat. I don't even know that you can. But that cat took stage direction. He simply stopped.
Yeah.
That was most unusual.
It was. And, you know, and the one thing about that scene with Kimball and the cat, I never really quite understood. I mean, the cat, because the cat seemed like a friendly cat. It didn't seem like the kind of cat that would go psychotic if he started to pet the cat or pick the cat up. I mean, I always wondered why he didn't just pick the cat up and hold the cat and pet the cat.
Well, I think he might have been afraid. The cat is on the table and moving dishes around. And Kimball might have been afraid just to go over there might have spooked the cat, and that might in itself have knocked something over. I mean, he had no way of knowing that the cat was going to knock something over eventually anyway. So I think that's one of the reasons, but you're right. I mean, that's a calculated risk, and it might be better just to grab the thing than it is to just wait for him to knock something over.
Yeah.
But I want to, while we're on this, I want to mention something, and I've mentioned this before in the past, but it bears mentioning right here again. I mean, to watch Amy stand toe-to-toe with Gerard is always great. And I know that Phil Gerard has an Achilles heel in this series, and it's women. I mean, he cannot deal with women. He doesn't know how to talk to women. He doesn't know how to relate to women. Women always get the better of him. I mean, Donna always gets the better of him when they have a confrontation. We saw Suzanne Plachette's character. She stood toe-to-toe with him in World's End. There was the prostitute at the end, in the middle of the end game in season one, who gave it back to him and blew smoke in his face. And now we have this. And this is a running theme throughout the series, and it really culminates in Landscape with Running Figures when we see that not only can Gerard not talk to women, he can't talk to his own wife, because every time he gets on the phone with her, he says the wrong thing. I mean, if there's one thing that bothers Gerard, it's not Kimball, it's not the one-armed man, it's not Captain Carpenter, it's none of that. It's women. Every time in this series, they seem to get the better of him. Did you notice that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, because they're always, you know, at least the non-psychotic ones are always protecting Kimball.
They're not afraid to do it. It's not just Amy. I mean, most of them are really not afraid to do that at all. And that, I think, that's one of the things I most enjoy about the series, is the fact that he's a big bully. We've seen him go into other police departments, you know, in other cities, take over and tell other commanding officers what to do, how many cops to put out, how many roadblocks.
Yeah, and you know, and you keep asking yourself, why are these guys taking orders from Gerard? Gerard has absolutely no jurisdiction there, and he ain't with the FBI. So he's just this cop from this paltry little small town. Who is he?
Well, he's intimidating.
Don't you think that Lieutenant Gerard's performance here is one of the best in the series in this episode?
Well, I think so. Yeah, I think it is. I think he's kind of well. I mean, there's a certain skepticism that he's going to carry along with him here, because the three of us know, and everybody watching the series knows, that there's really no way in the world you're ever going to convince him that Richard Kimball's not alive. I mean, it's simply ridiculous. It's never going to happen. Because he refused to believe it. You know, in this particular scene, he goes toe-to-toe with Amy. And then there's a great line, I'm sure you remember, as he's leaving. He goes to the door, and he actually admits that he's obsessed with catching Richard Kimball. He stands there and he goes, well, I think that my looking for him as bordering on obsession. When does he ever agree to say anything like that? And then on his way out the door, he turns around, he looks at her, and he says, thank you, you're a very stimulating woman. You know? Of course she is, because she knows how to talk to him. So you're right. He shows a little different side to his character at this particular time, and I just think that's very enjoyable. He thought he had her actually when he went in there, and he was just going to say, "Well, you know the one-armed man," but I can't find any evidence that anybody in this town knows anything about that. And then, although I have to question that. How could the Kimball case possibly be in the news anywhere without the one-armed man being part of the story? I find that a little odd when he says to her, well, there was no mention of the one-armed man. Do you think it's possible that this could have been carried in the news anywhere without the one-armed man being in the news? I don't think so.
No, well, listen, in discussing the realm of possibilities and probabilities, I agree with you, but we'll also take a quick time out. I forgot to tell the audience, if they want to participate, they can do so by phone, the usual number, as with the usual suspects, 800-407-KSAV. If you want to email, it's talk@ksav.org. Quick time out, right back with part two of part two on Talking Fugitive on Retro Radio.
Hear the music you love from the past. All the memories you cherish will last. Listen and you'll agree, it's the place.
place you wanna be. It's KSAB. Never far away, at work or at play, hear the sounds that you love every day. We play the sounds of today and yesterday, so stay with KSAB. Whether on the go or in your home, you'll hear songs of yesterday. KSAB, we'll be with you to warm the day in every way. So share the music of KSAB. Listen to us, we know you'll agree. It's the place you want to be for songs that fill the day. It's KSAB. Stay with
KSAB. I'm gonna keep on running him. Till the sole of his shoe gets in. Yeah, but when I catch that one old man, I can go turn myself in.
Speaking of the one-armed man, that's right where we were when we left off, talking fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken. So we'll pick up right where we left off. Bob, you take up again.
Dave, could you possibly tell us and our audience exactly what that music is, who it is, where it's from?
Some of it. It's called Fugitive Blues. I can't tell you the artist, and it was sent in by one of your listeners.
Really?
Oh. Yes.
Most unusual.
Okay.
Okay. When we come back in 2 weeks, we'll have another season two episode, and it'll be Richard Kimball's Worst Nightmare. And what is his worst nightmare? Well, his worst nightmare is any time Gerard shows up. But how about if another Gerard shows up? Oh, he hasn't got enough problems. He has to have another one. It's Phil Gerard Jr. Daddy has a son, and the question is he just as bad as Daddy or what? Nemesis is the next subject on Talking Fugitive in 2 weeks. Now, before we get into Act 4 of The End Is But the Beginning, Kitty has an email to read. Kitty?
Yes, I have an email here from Linda. And she says, this was indeed a classic episode, and Amy was a classic character. I liked your reference to her as the ideal doctor's wife. Personally, I think Amy was better suited to walk off into the sunset with Kimball than Karen. I liked the way she took the initiative, both in fishing for the date, planning the ruse, and confronting Gerard. Unfortunately, she was just a little too confident and then raised his suspicions. I liked Andrew Duggan's character. He obviously had feelings for Amy for some time, and then this drifter comes along and captures all her attention. No wonder he was jealous. I did think his cold announcement that Kimball was dead was pretty hard-hearted, though. So,
well, we got a problem with this. Ken, Amy over Karen?
I don't know. You know what? I've been thinking a lot. And you know what? Either one. Bob, what do you think?
Well, I think that Karen is sexier, prettier, has the blonde hair. You know, that's the... You can't discount that. However, Amy was, and I think we discussed this on the message board back when we reviewed it originally, Amy looks like the better doctor's wife. If you assume that Kimball will be exonerated and regain his medical practice, she looks like a really good doctor's wife. She'll always be there if he has to get up in the middle of the night and go to the hospital and perform an operation. She'll be waiting.
Yes,
when he gets back, she'll have the coffee made.
And that's what I say. Amy. I mean, let's not forget something here. That in Never Wave Goodbye, Karen dumped a doctor.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, maybe there was something about that lifestyle
that
didn't particularly appeal to her. So.
Right. So, I mean, because when you see Amy nurse Kimball back to health and make him breakfast and do all that, you got to think, I don't know. Maybe she's the better choice. It's hard to say.
You know, the hotel room scene where she's comforting Kimball and Kimball's writing the letter, and then that kitchen scene where Kimball's making breakfast and she's just there. I tell you what, she looks like a good match for Kimball.
Mm-hmm.
All right, before we get into the big ending here in Act 4, I want to mention something else because Ken, a couple minutes ago, mentioned how disappointed he was that there was no kiss or no close contact when there was an opportunity. But I was disappointed in something else. If you remember, I believe this is after Gerard leaves and they're planning to go back to the scene of the accident. She admits to Kimball that her coming on to him, so to speak, she doesn't use those words, were more out of being lonely. Remember her saying that?
Yeah.
Than actually being any romantic interest. I have two feelings about that. It was refreshing to have a woman say that to him, but I was also a little disappointed. I thought to myself, now, come on, Amy, you really had a romantic interest in him. And now she kind of pulls back and says, I don't know, you know what, I was feeling a little blue and a little lonely, and Ken, you don't really buy that, do you?
I don't know. I don't know what to take from that either. She said she was selfish.
She says now that she wants to go and help him find the dog tag. She says this is the first non-selfish thought I've had.
Yeah.
It didn't look like loneliness to me when she was staring at him out the window.
But that
at the beginning, it looks a little more lustful than that. I don't buy it.
But that was
I don't buy it either, actually, because I got the impression she was just kind of saying that to make him feel better.
Yeah, exactly, because it was obvious that he didn't share the same feelings for her. So
I took it to mean that it was obvious that, you know, that he couldn't stick around and they could start dating. He was going to have to leave.
Well, he couldn't stick around, but he could have shown, but that hasn't stopped him from kissing other women in the series. So I agree with Ken. I think that, you know, there is no real close contact, which indicates to me that Kimball's really not all that interested. And I think that's kind of a pity. I think he should have, you know, the writer should have let Kimball be just a little bit interested in her. But
I think the writer must have had a change in his mind when he wrote this thing, because initially you see at the beginning of the episode, Amy's all excited. She sees him, and she goes out there with the tickets, and he says, "Well, why don't you come with me? And we'll have, you know, and we'll have dinner beforehand." I mean, Kimball seemed to me like he was interested, and she was interested, and now all of a sudden they're both downplaying it all.
Okay. Well, before we run out of time, let's get to the big ending here, and the big ending is that Amy goes with Kimball back to the scene of the crash to find the dog tags, and they do find them. However, it's never quite that simple for Richard Kimball, because while they're there, her boss, John, shows up, and, of course, he's been terribly jealous from the beginning. He's on to the whole thing, and he's got a gun with him, and he's about to turn Kimball in because, well, not so much because he's a good citizen, but because he simply wants Kimball to stop moving in on somebody he considers to be his girlfriend. And what we have in this scene is there's a brief scuffle between Kimball and John, and then we have a shooting, and I got to turn this one over to Kitty, because I know she'll have something to say about this. This is one of those famous scenes in The Fugitive that harkens back to Smokescreen in season one, and that is that Amy gets shot, and Kimball says it's the subclavian artery, and there's not a bit of blood anywhere. Kitty, how is this possible?
He's just really superhuman, you know. He puts his hand on the wound, and there's no blood oozing out.
Wow.
I mean, she hardly looks critical,
wow.
You know. But I found the ending to this to be a little unsatisfying, because at the end, you know, you got John, who's poured his heart out, saying that he loves Amy. And, you know, and Richard's telling Amy to give him a chance, and it's like, oh, what do you know about it, Kimball? I mean, Amy looked like she thought her boss gave her the willies, quite frankly.
Well, you want to go to Ken about that, because in his review he said he considered John to be much too old for her anyway, right, Ken?
I thought Kimball gave the worst advice he's ever given in the entire series. Amy just took a bullet for Kimball. She got in the way. John shot her, and Kimball gives the advice to Amy.
Give him a chance.
Give him a chance, Amy. And if I was Amy, I would say, Kimball, I want you. I don't want this old geezer. You just shot me.
Well, yeah, that would be the thing I'd be saying. I'd be telling the guy, I said, you just shot me, you jerk. I'm giving you my 2 weeks' notice right now.
Yeah,
that was very striking to me. I thought to myself, you got to be kidding. I mean, if you can't hang around with her, just keep your mouth shut, but honestly.
I mean,
kind of a funny look, like, are you crazy?
To that place, she should move back to St. Louis.
I wanted the end scene. I was disappointed in the end and the epilogue. I thought the music was good. It was a little eerie.
Right.
You know, Gerard is there. He's looking over his shoulder. He's wondering, what's going on here?
Right.
And then I wanted an epilogue where Kimball calls Amy in the hospital, just like in Escape into Black.
Right.
You know, Kimball called, Miss Ruskin. You know, Ruskin.
Margaret Ruskin.
Yeah, Margaret Ruskin. And he calls her and says, hey, I'm okay. I wanted the same thing. I wanted Kimball to call Amy and say, hey, are you doing okay? I made it out all right. And then Amy says, you know, I love you or something.
Yeah, but then she would have had to admit to him that she's not about to go back to John. So. That's completely out of the question.
What did you think of the end, Bob?
I rather liked the epilogue. I didn't think it was bad because I liked the way Gerard, again, you mentioned that he was kind of smart in this episode. Even though Kimball's escaped, Gerard has no reason to hang around and say anything. But he goes up to him and he says, so tell me something. So you mentioned the doctor. So where was the doctor? And John goes, I must have said I need a doctor, not that there's a doctor here. And then Gerard says something you can't dispute. He says, well, how is it if you were alone with her that you were able, you had to keep your fingers in the wound to stop her from bleeding to death, but you were still able to call for help? That, you have to give Gerard props on that one because that's the most obvious thing of all. How is he able to do all of that? But I would say, since there's no blood anywhere anyway, the bullet probably missed her completely. I mean, this is absolutely bizarre.
I would say maybe Kimball misdiagnosed the wound.
Well, in season one, as we all know in Smokescreen, Kimball did a C-section on a woman and walked out of the tent there, and he didn't have a bit of blood on him. We don't know how he did that either. So this is some sort of new age surgery. I don't know how it gets done, but you know, I mean, I don't really require buckets of blood or anything in TV today. Of course, everything's got to be graphic, and I got to hit you over there with it. I don't need that, but I think it might have been just. Although I will say this, I liked Barbara Barry's performance here when she gets shot. You know, she kind of swoons a little bit. She rolls her eyes around. She's clutching her chest, and there may not be any blood around, but she looks like she's been grievously injured. But this is one of those weird moments, and the series amazes me for all the detail they go into on some things, that other things they just kind of let it fly. You would think somebody on the set would say, wait a minute, the woman just got shot in an artery. Consider it's an artery, and there's no blood at all. I mean, I don't know how long it takes to bleed to death, but it ain't long.
How about 1 minute?
Okay.
Okay.
You know, Barbara Barry and Betty Garrett, I think in our book, Bob, that they both tied for best performance by a guest actress.
Yeah, but excellent performances, and they both really had a feel for their characters in the series, and I think that's important. It's not, I mean, these two women only show up once in the series, unlike the other people who come back over and over again. So if you're only going to be in it once, you not only have to have a feel for the character as written in the script, but you also have to have a feel for the series, and they both did. And I don't know whether they did their homework or they had seen the show or they were fans of the show. It's hard to say that, but I think that's part of it. They really they knew the continuing story. It's not only about the episode you're in, it's about everything that's come before it, and I think you're right. I think these are probably the two best female performances in the entire series, without a doubt. So they deserve a lot of credit for that, and they add immeasurably to both stories.
All right, and on that note, we will wrap up for tonight and remind everybody that on July 10th, you'll be discussing the program Nemesis. I didn't know there was a Phil Gerard Jr.
Neither did Kimball.
Yeah, well, maybe it was a surprise to Gerard, too. Anyway, you join us at that time. Kitty and Bob and Ken will all be back. Nemesis will continue to talk Fugitive on ShareaVision Radio.
So bad when it ain't a
he have done.